Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplexes and at the art house.
Warehouse, farmhouse, hen house, outhouse, or doghouse in that area.
You'll also hear about new and old films on Blu-ray and on DVD. Plus, you'll hear all the latest Hollywood gossip.
I don't care!
Okay, maybe not the latter, but it is time for Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Shizzy!
No, that's Matthew Sosi.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever, yes.
Let's see how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Sosi.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD To The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Sosi. This show is available as a podcast, and it's also available on iTunes. Yes, friends, it is the big weekend. The Film Geeks Final Four and Super Bowl all wrapped into one. The Academy Awards are happening Sunday night, so if you're listening to this Monday morning at 10, whew. Anyway, I'm going to save some of the major Oscar picks for the end of the show. How's that for keeping a suspense? Because we got a busy show today. Because it's Academy Award weekend, I'm going to replay my interview with actor Doug Jones, who, of course, appears in The Shape of Water, which is up for 13 awards. And we have some dead people we like, and got some, if there's time, some music from a film that is being remade and opening this weekend. Yes, there's a remake of Death Wish with Bruce Willis and directed by Eli Roth. More on that later. But first, I do want to start things off with film sociology correspondent McKenna Mays interviewing Kathy and John Bruner of the Envision Film Festival, which is happening this weekend at Taylor University. Enjoy.
How did this festival start?
Well, the Envision Film Festival is the second iteration of Taylor's Film Festival. We used to have kind of a big campus event called the Trojan Film Festival, which really was about highlighting students' fun dorm videos back in the probably 15 years ago. And then when my husband and I came and developed this program in film and visual storytelling at Taylor, our students started winning all the awards. And so eventually in 2008, I believe it was, they handed the festival over to our film and media production program and said, why don't you run with this? And we've done that. We added in 2010 a high school competition so that we can get some interested prospective students to send in work as well. And so it's a great event for us. It's kind of the highlight of our year.
And what's new for the 2018 festival, special guests and stuff like that?
Do you want to talk about guests, John?
Sure. We're really excited. It's going to be a great year. One of our alums is coming back, a guy named Mike Edwards, who runs a company called the Five Stones Group, which he named after the five stones David pulled out of the river to go slay Goliath with. And he kind of sees it at his company that way, as the little company that goes off and does great things. He's won 11 Emmys, and he just recently, I guess in the last little while, has got his documentary Searching for Augusta onto PBS. And so he's been he's busy in a lot of different areas. He's great. Another one of our guests is a woman who attended Taylor, and her name is Deb Oyer, and she's a production coordinator on the TV show Chicago PD, but she's also done lots of television and film. I mean, her list of accomplishments is really too long to even read, but she's done Ocean's 12 and Batman Begins. Home Alone 2, she did Adventures in Babysitting back in the day. She's worked at virtually every studio in L.A., you name it, and it's probably on her list, NBC Universal and Sony Entertainment, Warner Brothers, Disney. And so she's really excited to come back. And for the last 4 years in a row, she's hired one of our alum or one of our grads to go work with her. So she's been wonderful. And then our last guest is a guy named Josh Larson.
Yeah, Josh is the co-host of the radio show and podcast Film Spotting, which airs on WBEZ and then, of course, is downloadable as well. But he is a film critic who got his start in the newspaper business and then worked his way up to the Chicago Sun-Times for more than 10 years. And now he's, like I said, a critic on WBEZ, and we're excited to have him on campus. He's also going to speak at Taylor's Chapel because he is a Christian by background and has written a book called Movies Are Prayers, How Films Voice Our Deepest Longings. So I think our students are really going to connect with that idea that sometimes films are transcendent.
What is your kind of calendar year like for this festival? When do you start planning everything?
Not soon enough, we've learned. there's an awful lot going on tomorrow that had to be scheduled. There are workshops tomorrow night and then all day long on Friday. So we've learned we should have started in November. We started a little later. We had other projects we were in the middle of, but
we usually start in early January, and so it's about 2 months worth of work to make it come together.
Yeah, it's 2 months worth of time. We've done about 3 or 4 months worth of work, and so we definitely need to start earlier.
This festival really is geared towards college and high school students. Why is it so important that these young adults are so heavily involved with this festival?
Well, this is our opportunity to celebrate the work of the last calendar year. So this is really the best work of our students. And so we have a mission statement that basically says we're trying to honor aspiring filmmakers whose visual storytelling explores the whole range of human experience. In a way that is hopeful and artistic and truthful and with a lot of integrity. So that kind of uses the words that are important to us in our program. This is a chance for our alumni judges, actually, to decide what is the best work that's been produced in the last year by Taylor filmmakers. So we're pulling together fiction, nonfiction documentaries, music video. Just even this year we have some stop-motion animation pieces. But all of them are the best work that we've done this year. And so it's a great opportunity for our students to reflect back on what they've done and for the younger students to aspire to do great work as well.
And what went into the decision to open up the submission process to high school students in 2010?
Well, some of that is really just our desire to build good storytellers. I mean, we've got this great, these great resources coming to campus, these great people. We're doing sessions on Steadicam. We shoot on RED 8K cameras. So we've got great content and great tech, and there's a lot going on. And we thought, we should really share this. And if we're serious about building good storytellers, it would be great to just reach out to, if any of the high school students are able to come, it'd be great to have them come and join us for this.
And obviously it has some value for us introducing them to our program in case they're a good fit for Taylor University. This is a wonderful way to expose them to what we're doing here and for us to encourage them in their artistic endeavors, even if they don't come to Taylor.
What kind of opportunities are being opened up to the students because of this festival?
I would say the guests who come are routinely blown away by what they see and are able to offer a lot of encouragement to our students. And their enthusiasm for what our students are doing tends to buoy them up and encourage them in a huge way. So sometimes that leads to connections in the future or doors that they can open for our students down the road. You want to talk about Deb's workshop?
Well, yeah, Deb, the production coordinator from Chicago PD, she's doing a session on finding your place in film and TV production. So it's really like a help you discover who you are in this industry, where your strengths lie and where your interests lie. We have a really high placement ratio, and I think this sort of thing helps that. It helps our students target, what they really are passionate about and the skills they have that support that.
So this isn't really like your typical film festival where you just go and view videos. You guys actually have workshops and other activities that go on. Can you talk a little bit about those?
Yeah. I mean, we attend the Sundance Film Festival each year with our students and also participate in more local events like the Heartland Film Festival. And there are often workshop components. So we're modeling ourselves after some of the best festivals that do have an education component and not just celebrate great work, but also help people improve the craft.
Talking a little bit about the submission process, what is it like?
Well, back in end of January was our deadline for high school submitters. We had an online form that they could submit and tell us who was involved in the project and what the log line or the one-sentence summary was for the film and what they were trying to achieve. And then those high school films were judged by some of our current staff. And then our current students filled out the same online form and sent us a link to their work. And then those films were sent out to alumni of Taylor who decided which ones should be screened this year at Envision.
And do you guys have any favorite or standout submissions?
That would be like asking you who your favorite child is. So I don't think we're allowed to say that. I teach documentary film, so I'm always partial to the nonfiction, and John teaches fiction, so he probably leans that way, but we really could not pick a winner at this moment.
Okay. And is this festival open to anyone or just Taylor students?
Oh, no, this is totally open to the public. In fact, we have a really loyal following of people from Grant County especially who put this down on their calendar as a must-see event, and so we have a lot of people who have already called in and have their tickets at will call. So we would invite the public from the surrounding area to come and join. It's just a $5 ticket.
And where is the festival held?
It is held in the Rediger Auditorium, which is inside the Boren Campus Center on Taylor's campus.
For people who can't make it to the festival, can you view the submissions and videos on a website?
Eventually. It takes us a couple of weeks to get everything up, but yes, eventually at www.envisionfilmfestival.com, the winning films will be viewable.
What have you guys watched recently, film-wise?
Well, we just returned from Sundance probably 3 weeks ago, and we were privileged to see the big dramatic grand prize winner, which was Burden, a really amazing story about a young man who has to choose between the girlfriend and the Ku Klux Klan, and he makes the tough choice to leave the Klan, and it's a beautiful story of redemption, so we enjoyed that. More recently, we were in Muncie last Friday night watching Black Panther.
Did you enjoy that?
Go ahead, John.
Yeah, I mean, I am not a giant Marvel Universe fan. I mean, I like the films. They're fun, and I like that one a lot. Probably one of my favorite of the Marvel films, but I'm a little more of the step away from the Fantasyland film kind of guy. But
film professors, we were pretty excited to have, you know, an all-black cast or mostly black cast and a black director, and, you know, it's been far too long. So in the world of representation, this is a very important film.
Can I get some of your thoughts on spiritual and biblical films, on modern spiritual and biblical films?
Sure. Well, actually, the Sundance-winning film that I just described, Burden, is in many ways a portrayal of the gospel and the idea of sin needing redemption, and there's even a baptism scene in it. The film's directed by a Jew, actually, so, you know, certainly not someone steeped in the gospel story, but the story itself really tells that tale. So, and those are the kinds of stories that we're interested in, where, you know, the biblical worldview is present, but not hammering you over the head in an awkward way like some of the Christian films tend to do.
Mm-hmm. And what was your first film date?
Our first film date?
Yeah.
My goodness.
Wow. Oh.
I don't know if I even remember. Wow.
Did they have film back then? Did they?
I don't remember. I mean, we would have been dating in about, you know, 1982?
No.
Yeah, I do not even remember.
been that long. Okay, and for more information for the festival, where can people go to?
EnvisionFilmFestival.com.
Okay.
Film sociology correspondent McKenna Mays with Kathy and John Bruner of the Envision Film Festival, which is happening at Taylor University this weekend. Okay, we are going to take a small break, and when we come back after the break, my interview with Doug Jones from December. Stick around. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.
Hey, this is Doug Jones, and you're listening to Film Sociology on WFYI.
Welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Socey. The music you heard before the break is from the soundtrack to the original film version of Death Wish. Music performed and conducted and composed by Herbie Hancock. A remake of Death Wish has opened in theaters this weekend, starring Bruce Willis and directed by Eli Roth. It was supposed to come out in November, and they apparently pushed the opening back because of a school shooting. And what happened before the release of Death Wish last week, not to mention what happened on Friday at Central Michigan University. I guess it's all in the timing, ladies and gentlemen. So if you want to see a remake of Death Wish with Bruce Willis, it's out there. Okay, we'll get to my interview with Doug Jones in just a little bit, but I do want to mention some stuff that's coming through Indianapolis and Franklin and some dead people we like, because we never have time for dead people we don't like. But if you're over at IU Cinema, man, get ready for this. There's a lot of cool stuff coming at 3 o'clock, of course, on Saturday, March 3rd. Hostel Border at 3 p.m. At 6:30 p.m., last year's dark comedy Beatrice at Dinner with Salma Hayek and John Lithgow. Elliot Loves at 9:30 p.m. Sunday, March 4th, Baharao Mastani at 3 o'clock. Monday, March 5th, The Temptation of St. Tony at 7 p.m. Just added for you Vincent Price fans. Thursday, March 8th, a lecture called Vincent Price, Master of Menace, Lover of Life. And then at 7 o'clock, the 1964, The Mask of the Red Death. And then at Friday, March 9th, at 7 p.m., The Abominable Dr. Fibes. Nice additions right there. Saturday, March 10th, at 3 p.m., Whale Rider. In Between will be screened at 7 p.m. In Between will be screened Sunday, March 11th at 3 p.m. And at 6:30 p.m. on Sunday, March 11th, The Abyss. And then March 19th, that's a Monday at 7 p.m. from 1958 St. Louis Blues, or St. Louis Blues. Also just added, Tuesday, March 20th at 5 o'clock, Funkology, a conversation with Bootsy Collins and Dr. Scott Brown. And then Saturday, March 24th, moving ahead, 3 p.m. as a part of the Robert Altman series at 3 p.m. Saturday, March 24th from 1977, Three Women. And then at 7 o'clock on the 24th as a part of the Staff Selections series, Eve's Bayou, great film from 1997. So lots happening at IU Cinema. Don't miss out. March 9th and 10th at the Art Craft Theater in Franklin at 2 and 7:30 p.m., Pretty in Pink. March 16th and 17th at 2 and 7:30 p.m., Anatomy of a Murder. March 23rd and 24th at 2 and 7:30 p.m., The Neverending Story. April 6th and 7th at 2 and 7:30 p.m., All About Eve. Emma, take note. April 13th and 14th at 2 and 7:30 p.m., Napoleon Dynamite. Friday, April 20th at 7:30 p.m., Real Women Vintage Wine, Bridget Jones's Diary. And then Saturday, April 21st at 11 a.m. and 2 p.m., a Cartoons for Cans special event. So mark your calendars there. Okay, let's get to some dead people we like, because we never have time for dead people we don't like. Shruti Kapoor, hope I'm saying that right, Bollywood's first female superstar, died at the age of 54. Known for films like English Vinglish, Mom, Mr. India, Shahbaz, Salute. Director Louis Gilbert, who directed the original Alfie in 1966, did three Bond films, You Only Live Twice, The Spy Who Loved Me, and Moonraker. And then he directed two films with that are very special to the hearts of the Soucy family, Educating Rita and Shirley Valentine. And also Rick McKay, documentary filmmaker who died at the age of 62, spent time in Beech Grove, Indiana, taught at the Indiana School for the Deaf, but he has a really cool documentary from 2004 called Broadway, The Golden Age, by the legends who were there. Don't miss that. Check that out. All right, ladies and gentlemen, my interview with Doug Jones. Enjoy. Joining me on Film Sociology is actor and, full disclosure, fellow Ball State graduate, fellow Cardinal, Doug Jones. How are you, Doug?
I like this. I'm doing great, but full disclosure, like it's normally a secret.
No, I think the fact that we sort of know each other is,
yes,
is from,
yeah, we go back.
We need to go back a little bit. Now, first off, I have to say, it has been quite the week for Doug Joneses.
Oh, well, tell me about it. You know, in this day, in this age of social media, I didn't realize how much one can be tagged in the wrong hashtag. Right?
So what? When did it start? I mean, did it start obviously election night, or did it start before?
Oh, it started before. You know, as the campaign was heating up in Alabama, the other Doug Jones, we were getting some cross pollination on our fan bases and or our hate bases, whatever it was. Yeah, in fact, even my manager's office even got calls and emails in support of or in detest of me, and it, not realizing it was the wrong Doug Jones they were calling about.
So how many times have you had to address this online?
Well, I put up one post on all my social media platforms the day after the election just to say, hey, everybody, thanks for your concern, not me.
Well, despite that, 2017 has been quite the year. I'm happy to say you are the star, the non-human star of The Shape of Water, which opened this past week. And I guess I want to go back with, how did you get in touch, or how did you become a part of the Guillermo del Toro players?
Oh, golly, we go back 20 years. We met in 1997 when he was doing his first American studio film, which was Mimic.
Mm-hmm.
And I was called in. I was referred to him by the creature effects people who had worked on the movie in Toronto, and they were doing some pickup shots in L.A. So I only worked for the last 3 days of the film shoot as a bug creature for him. And it was during our lunch break on the second day of that 3 days that he sat across the table from me, put his chin in his hands, and said, "So, Dougie, tell me everything you've been in before." So I started rattling off my resume, and at that point I had done things like, this is 97, so I'd done like Warriors of Virtue and Tank Girl, two movies in which I played a kangaroo man.
Mm-hmm.
I'd done Hocus Pocus, playing Billy the Zombie already by then, and had done a ton of commercials, including the iconic Mac Tonight campaign for McDonald's, where
That's
I was
right.
the crescent moon head that sang atop a piano. He knew every makeup artist I'd ever worked with, and he loved creepy crawly monsters and wanted to hear more about them. And I knew then that I was dealing with a man who was unlike any other director I had ever met in my life. And he that day became my favorite and has remained so for the last 20 years.
And he's used you on almost every film, is that right, since?
The only, right, since then, let's see, since we met on Mimic, he did he did The Devil's Backbone and then Blade 2 without me, both of those. Then came back around for me on Hellboy 1.
Right.
And that came out in theaters in 2004. And then Ben Pan's Labyrinth, then Hellboy 2, then Crimson Peak, and now The Shape of Water. This is my sixth film with him now. And I also was a recurring vampire for him on his TV show, The Strain. So we've been through a lot together in those 20 years.
What? So, I mean, do you guys have a shorthand when it comes to working together?
Yes. He's the kind of director, he sums up every actor upon meeting. He's a people studier.
Mm-hmm.
So once he knows the actor he's working with, he kind of develops a control panel on each one of us that with a series of buttons to push to get a reaction or an adjustment out of us on the day while we're filming. So he develops kind of a shorthand with everybody he works with. But now he knows me so well now, though, that he knows if he can make me chuckle, that I'll hear him and I'll know what adjustment to make. For instance, when we were working on Hellboy 2, The Golden Army, there was one scene where the camera was dollying around me and I was doing a piece of action with no dialogue in that scene, just like picking up a thing and doing a thing with a prop. And after take one, he said, "Dougie, cut. You're boring me to tears." That's all I had to hear, and I laughed, and I made the adjustment he needed. And so we kind of in Pan's Labyrinth, I played the Fawn and the Pale Man in that movie.
Right. I think everybody knows you for the Eyeballs for Hands guy.
The Eyeballs in the Hands guy, yeah. While playing that character, when I stood up and started walking after I awakened and was trying to chase little Ivana Baquero as my dinner, I was a bit too gangly, a bit too loose jointed, and he said, no, cut. And then he said, "Give me a George Romero zombie." That's all I needed to hear. And
yep.
Went back and did it again, and we never discussed it again. And in Hellboy 2, The Golden Army, I did three characters. I reprised my role of Abe Sapien, the blue fish guy. I played the Angel of Death. And I played the Chamberlain, which is a lesser-known character, but he was in a couple of key scenes. And in that one, it was a kind of a boxy-headed guy with really long, spindly fingers. And he said, "Dougie, when you play the Chamberlain, I want you to give him sort of a ew." He made that noise, drew his fingers together, and tilted his head. I'm like, "Yep, got it." And that's all the more we discussed. So I think when you make a sound effect and a hand gesture, we can call that a shorthand, can't we?
That's almost like Dr. English, really.
I know.
Sorry, Ball State humor. What's funny, Doug, is going through, and if you go to Doug Jones' IMDb page, you've seen him in one way, shape, or form. And we've talked of, you've heard of character actors being known as that guy or that lady, and the fact that you have a lot of fill-in-the-blank guy. You know, everything
right.
from the Bye Bye Man, as you said, to, you know, Fish Guy, to the, you know, your Amphibian Man, of course, in Shape of Water.
You're
him. Or
right.
her.
And including this, I'm having quite a year right now. The Shape of Water is coming out in theaters now, right now. In fact, it opens in Indianapolis tonight.
Yes.
Or today, the 15th. I think it's only in a couple of key theaters there, and then it's going to be open wide, nationwide, in all the multiplexes and everything on the 22nd. So there's the date difference. But so Indianapolis is getting it a week before the rest of the nation, which I'm very excited about,
well,
my hometown.
So are we. So thank you for that.
Yeah, of course. What was the question?
I think it's a way of, you have a way of being recognized and not being recognized at the same time, although, you know, you also have Star Trek on your hands.
That's talking about the year I was having, right. I'm right now on hiatus from between seasons 1 and 2 of Star Trek Discovery, so it's a perfect time for the movie to come out so I can actually focus on promoting that. But CBS All Access is, if you log on to CBS.com, All Access, you'll see their entire catalog that's available there for subscription, and including the original series of Star Trek Discovery, which is made just for CBS All Access. So that's the place you can see it. And it's a huge, big production that is carrying on the legacy and of this beloved franchise. And our show actually takes place 10 years before the original series, before Kirk and Spock. So we're kind of a build-up to the Starship Enterprise.
Were you a fan of Star Trek growing up?
You can't not be, really. I was born in 1960, so when the original series was on TV in its network first run, I was watching it with my family on our black and white TV. So, I absolutely loved it, the possibilities and the way it made you wonder about what else is out there. And of course, it opens up, it expands your mind a bit. And then every incarnation since then, whether it was Next Generation or Voyager, Deep Space Nine, Enterprise, and all the movies, I've loved them all. And as an actor who's worn lots of rubber bits over my 30-year career, I get asked all the time, "Have you ever done anything in Star Trek?" And I hadn't. So now that I'm 57 years old, I can finally say yes. I'm so excited about it.
And we figured, and it's interesting what you can get across. You know, I should put this. It's interesting what you can get across message-wise if you set it in science fiction or fantasy, as far as messages.
Absolutely. I think that, and that's something that Guillermo del Toro will talk about, too, with The Shape of Water. We can escape into a fantasy world, whether it's a fairy tale or it's Once Upon a Time in 1962 is kind of how The Shape of Water comes about.
Yep,
it takes you out of the world you're in right now, and maybe parallels some things that are happening in our world today, but empowers you to you delve into it with a fish man at the centerpiece of the movie, and what he's going through, what the young lady played by Sally Hawkins is going through, the love story that builds there, and the obstacles that they're given, and everyone else in the movie, Octavia Spencer, Michael Shannon, Michael Stuhlbarg, Richard Jenkins, all these beautiful actors have characters that are so well-rounded and well-layered, and everyone has a full story to tell.
Yep.
And every story involves love and how they're dealing with it, how they're seeking it, and and the challenges they have in finding it. But I think the ultimate story of it is you come out of the theater empowered to go to say, I can tackle the monsters in my real life. I can tackle the love issues in my real life, and love is possible, even if I feel unlovely, and even if I feel like I'm a monster that no one would ever find attractive. It is possible, and we can find the beauty in that monster instead of the horror of it.
This is my Shape of Water is my favorite love story of the year, and it's true. And I would have even if I didn't know you.
Oh, thank you. That's very kind.
Because it fits the element of I love unconventional love stories or love stories that when you describe the story and then you have to tag it with, well, it just so happens. So it just so happens it's a deaf custodian with a fish guy.
Right. You have a mute janitor lady
right.
who is working at a secret government test facility. And I'm an asset who's been acquired in the Amazon in South America. And I'm being tested. And she finds me, connects with me, comes to visit me on her nighttime lunch breaks and her night shift. And love brews from that.
Yep.
On paper, that looks ridiculous. But... In the filming process, you have Guillermo del Toro at the helm directing this, and he wrote it. So of course it's going to work because he's the one filmmaker who could pull this one off.
As I watched it, I mean these comparisons as a compliment. I've been telling people, and I've told people on the show, imagine Beauty and the Beast, Splash, and the Iron Giant kind of rolled into one, but it's written and directed by Guillermo del Toro. So
boom,
there's
your one-liner right
it's,
there.
It's R-rated. There's Michael Shannon's buttocks. There's a scene with Michael Stuhlbarg's cheek, and I don't want to give it away, but there's several lovely moments with you and Sally Hawkins. One that happens in the final third of the film, I don't see coming.
Yes,
and,
my favorite movie.
And I will say, I'm like, okay, this is another reason why Doug took it, and it also does a part of your Ball State training that I don't think you've been able to utilize in film in a while.
You are correct, sir.
Okay, that's wonderfully gray and specifically vague. Good.
I love it. Good. But we didn't spoil anything. I think we just enticed some interest right there.
And you know, as somebody who sees films a lot, to be pleasantly gobsmacked by a moment of like, oh, because you're like, okay, guy and girl and a fish, I can run with this. It's fine. Oh, wow. So yeah, this film hits you with surprises.
Yes, it does indeed.
So get through the press. So give me through a morning. You, what time do you arrive and how much time does it take for you to prepare for Amphibian Man?
Right. Well, normally for a Guillermo del Toro movie, now Over the seven projects I've done with him now, I have played 12 creatures for him in the all that, because I've done double duty several times.
Right.
Every creature I've played for him usually takes between 5 and 7 hours to put on me. But the amphibian man in The Shape of Water was a merciful 3 hours. But my call time was still before everybody else's, and my wrap time at the end of the night was after everybody else's. So my days were long. I was doing the 17, 18-hour days. It's a common, but the makeup process was done on me by Legacy Effects, which is a renowned makeup creature house here in Los Angeles, and they had a lot of those pieces pre-made for me. So I did tons of fittings for months before the movie started filming. So that's when they were doing the sculpting on a life cast of me to make it fit me and only me, mm-hmm. and that would be sculpting and painting prosthetic pieces that would be glued onto me or slipped onto me and zipped up the back, and gills that were operated by mechanical puppeteers off camera. And so it took a village to make this character come together. But on set then, once all that pre-work has been done, on set the makeup artists had the chore of piecing all this together. The puzzle was getting it all on me in the right places, and then connecting the paint job that was already started back in the shop, and finishing up and making it seamless and making it pretty and ready for film. So there you go. So that's how I spent my 3 hours, and hopefully we'd have some music playing, or if we had a laptop open, we could watch a talking cat video on YouTube to entertain me.
I would say, are you able to sleep during this process at all?
Well, not all of it, but
okay.
Because when they're working around you 360 degrees around your body, and you have to stand some of the time,
okay,
and shimmying into the body part of it is not a sit down relaxed thing. It took three adult men sweating and huffing and puffing to get me in that suit, because it was skin tight. Mm-hmm. It was made because I had to bend and move in all directions without causing wrinkles. So that meant many adjustments and a lot of tight.
So what music did got you through the process?
Well, you know, your creature effects makeup artists are guys who love heavy metal. So that does not relax me or get me started for my day at all, especially in about to tell a romantic tale. So I would ask, can we put on some vintage Mariah Carey or Whitney Houston? I love a good gutsy ballad from one of those ladies. And then I'll be ready to do a love scene.
Although Whitney and Water, that didn't end well.
Oh, you had to go there, didn't you?
I'm a terrible host. I'm sorry.
I know.
So, were you able to have a rehearsal process before shooting? And I asked that because of the intimacy with you and Sally Hawkins in the film. Wonderful chemistry.
Well, the scene that we were not speaking of, this particular surprise scene, involved some specific choreography of where our bodies should go and how they should go.
Yeah. Well, that too.
So we did have 3 weeks of rehearsal time together before the cameras rolled. So that bought us a lot of those 3 weeks. Not only did we work out where our feet should go, but we also had downtime to giggle together, cry together sometimes, share our secrets and stories and our insecurities even. I mean, we were both terrified of this movie because we both had vulnerable, intimate scenes to play together. And we also, she had to learn American Sign Language.
Yes.
She had to learn, again, this choreography I'm talking about. And she also had to disrobe in a couple times in the movie to carry out some love scenes.
Yeah, I was going to say, folks, there is a shower scene, but not what you expect.
No, it's with a fish man that changes everything.
Well, that too, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's, to be able to open yourself up and, you know, because there's been a lot of change in the business lately. So the fact that an actress of the caliber of Sally's to open herself up physically that much and trusting you and trusting Guillermo, I mean, it says a lot. And it'll make some people uncomfortable, but that's, I mean, film is hopefully going to do that in all the right ways.
Yeah. It's rated R because it does push some limits with those images, but it's a part of his storytelling and the movie has kind of a French feeling to it, and you know, and the mm-hmm. French movies they throw topless women around like candy, you know. So, this is not gratuitous at all. It's really
correct.
It's done with an artistic flair, and for everything has a reason. He doesn't do anything without a reason behind it. So I think he did want to show her sexuality as a thing of beauty and an unrealized thing in her life. Because as you meet her at the beginning of the film, she has a very set routine every day. She boils her eggs in water. She masturbates in water. She brushes her shoes and goes to work. So she is a very, very set routine. So when she rescues me from this government test facility before they finally kill me, she stops that from happening because with her little rescue escape plan for me, with her friends Octavia Spencer and Richard Jenkins pulling together to help this happen, I end up in her bathtub, the same place where she was pleasuring herself before. So it's kind of like a full circle thing where this alone lifestyle that she had is now involves another being, and can this work? And you find yourself as an audience kind of rooting for it to work somehow.
Mm-hmm.
I did when when I watched the movie back. It's like, yeah, I want those two to get together, and I am one of them. So.
Is this the most water work you've done for a project?
Yes, by far, because when I played Abe Sapien in the Hellboy movies, I was never really in water. That was all either hanging on wires, shooting dry for wet, and which we did do some in the Shape of Water as well. We shot some dry for wet with a smoke-filled studio and lighting effect rippling through it, and us hanging on wires with fans blowing on us. And they add some CG production afterwards with bubbles and hair movement. But I was in water this time. I was in the flooded bathroom scene is real water. It's an 8-foot tank that they built that bathroom set in. And the pool area of the laboratory that I'm chained into, that is also, of course, real water that I have to come up out of or dive back into. So I had to start many, many takes of many scenes by hearing the cameras rolling, holding my breath, going under, counting to three, and then coming back up to start my acting.
Those
challenges that I hadn't had in anything before.
They didn't throw us in a pool at Ball State.
Mm-mm.
I
did. I think I had a swimming. I passed some swimming tests during a PE course. I think in the pool.
But you didn't have one of the. You didn't have one of the profs telling you to pontificate or revert back to childhood memories.
No, you did that right. It was in the PE department, not in the theater department. Correct.
Sorry, it just cracks me up. Were you able to interact with the rest of the cast, or was there a separation between you and the rest of the human cast?
No. We Guillermo encouraged us to socially get together ahead of time. And again, like I told you, the rehearsal time with Sally, we built a trust and a deep affection for each other that hopefully, by the time the cameras did roll, we had hopefully some romantic chemistry to play on film, and. Octavia Spencer and Michael Stuhlbarg, who played our one of the lead scientists, and he was a scientist that had a heart toward
me.
He actually had an affection for the fish man, his love affair was with science. And Michael Stuhlbarg, by the way, side note, he's also currently being touted for some Oscar buzz for Call Me by Your Name with his supporting role in that.
Indeed,
But we also, and then Michael Shannon was the one. Guillermo del Toro would have dinners for the cast a lot. He loves eating together. Guillermo's bonding time is over food. So we would all get together for dinners throughout the entire production. And he kept Michael Shannon away from us for a while. Michael Shannon played our nemesis. He was kind of the bad guy of the movie. And he kind of kept us apart until about maybe halfway through the production, when he started inviting him to our cast dinners, and he did that kind of on purpose, so that when we were working with him, that there was a sense of unfamiliarity and a sense of antagonism coming from him still.
And at the very least, check out Michael Shannon on Funny or Die. It's one of my favorite pieces of acting he's ever done, and it's one of my favorite things on Funny or Die, where he reads the sorority letter.
Okay.
So, I mean, and then you guys were able to connect in a different way with the film junket. So, how many hotel suites have you guys been hanging out in?
Oh my goodness! Between Los Angeles and New York, we've been back and forth. I'm just finishing up week three of doing PR and promotion and press for the movie. So, just a lot. I can't even tell. Countless.
So I guess back to the water thing a little bit. How's your ear pressure?
Oh, well, that's something that I don't think anybody – I'm going to give you an exclusive bit of information right now
I
have not talked about in any of my interviews over the past 3 weeks. I just forgot about it until now. During the production, I got an ear infection because the water that was trapped in my prosthetic makeup that was trapped in my head kind of lingered in my ears for a while. And I had some wax buildup, and both my ears got infected, and I had to go to a doctor and get some special drops.
Jeez. Oh, God. Well, it's that Ball State journalism education that I ask that. And
of course, you have to investigative journalism.
Exactly.
Right there, folks.
I say, you guys talked about bonding over dinner. Could you have seafood?
Oh yes, I'm totally a cannibal. Absolutely.
In high school, I read The Jungle and ate a hot dog at the same time.
You go, baby.
Exactly. And so, will you have a new appreciation for Esther William films now after working on this?
Oh, totally. Yeah. In fact, while filming The Shape of Water. In Toronto, I had an apartment there in the city while filming, and thank heaven we had AMC and Turner Classics, TCM movies, and I watched a bunch of old films, and they were having an Esther Williams marathon one day, and I was like, oh, this is big, perfect. So watching how smooth and effortless she looked in the water, it's like that honestly did help inspire. Believe it or not, I know you're kidding, but it actually did help.
Well, I think as an actor, when you work on a particular aspect, for example, I don't know if you know the Tom Stoppard play, The Real Inspector Hound.
I've heard of it, but I haven't seen it.
I was in a production of it at Earlham. I had to play a corpse. So I was dead on stage for 50 minutes, and then the director, Mickey Wyatt, said, I need you on stage when House opens.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm dead for an hour and 20 minutes.
Oh.
But so that aspect of after that, like watching Julius Caesar, I'm like, I'm watching the guy playing Caesar dead on the floor. You know, so I think now forever you're going to notice acting when it's done in water.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Am I ever? Yeah.
Because the last time I had you on the show, you alluded to Guillermo was saying he had a pet project for you. Was this it? Or was there something else? I couldn't remember because I know there was rumors that I think he was trying to make a Kong film or his own Godzilla film, if I remember correctly.
I believe it was his own Frankenstein film.
Frankenstein. Sorry.
Right.
Okay.
And I believe that's what I might have been alluding to last, because I think last time I haven't been on your show.
It's been a while. Too long.
Years. How long has it been?
No, it hasn't been that long. I think it was right when you were doing Crimson Peak. I think.
Oh, well, okay. Crimson Peak was, 2014, 15.
Right. So this should just be an annual event, Doug. I love having
And if it was 2014 or 15, then yes, I was referring to The Shape of Water by then.
Oh,
yes.
Okay. So
yes, because that was I was sworn to secrecy for a while because I heard about it. Yeah, he first pulled me aside to talk to me about it while we were filming Crimson Peak in Toronto. Had a day off, and he called me into his office that day to discuss The Shape of Water behind closed doors, and I was sworn to secrecy. So that was almost 4 years ago we had that talk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I want to go back a little bit. I also am on – I did this the last time we talked. I'm on your IMDb page.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to find out what's true and what's not.
Mm-hmm.
Although I do want to mention it was fun taking my daughter to see The Bye Bye Man.
Yeah.
Because anytime you came on screen, Emma, not being scared, would just go, Dougie.
Oh, good. Okay.
And, you know, we're laughing our heads off. And I know people laugh at horror films, but it was we had a different laughter for different reasons. So.
And The Bye Bye Man is full of those laughs. I totally understand. I totally understand.
So, okay. So here's what has been listed as announced, pre-production, post-production, completed, whatever. We're going to find out, Doug Jones, did this actually happen or not?
Oh, good. Okay.
There was something announced called Zero Dawn of the Dark Lighters.
Right. That is I voiced the character of Zero, the robot, and the robot who is on a space journey.
Okay.
I voiced that role before they went into production. I don't know if they've ever gone into production. I've never heard a follow-up about that. So I was in a sound studio in San Diego, California. I voiced the entire feature film. and I got paid. So as far as I'm concerned, it's a valid credit.
All right. Well, as long as it, definitely when the check clears.
Right.
The legacy of Avril Kite, where you're listed as Dr. Stewart.
Right. Read the script, liked it, said, yes, I'd love to do this. It has been on my IMDb page in pre-production ever since for the last, what, 4 years maybe? I don't know. I don't know if it's ever going to get made, child. I have no idea.
Okay. Next, Hell's Kitty, where you play Father Damien.
Yes, was a web series that was called Hell's Kitty, and I did play that character. It was hilarious. I was, and the other, Bill Oberst, is a horror iconic actor who was he was a priest with me. We were doing an exorcist spoof in that particular episode of this web series, Hell's Kitty. They're compiling that footage back together again for over the entire web series to make a feature film out of it. So I think that's why the credit shows up a couple times as completed and in pre-production, because it's the recompilation that they're working on as a feature.
Okay. A TV movie called Nazareth, where you are President Glade.
Yes, that was I did film that, and I at Asbury University in Wilmore, Kentucky. I have a scholarship fund there. Actually, it's because I have a family legacy at that university. My grandfather was vice president of that university back in the black and white days. So I joined their theater and film department last year to play the role of a university president in a TV pilot that has yet to see the light of day. But it's they made it, and it was one of those immersive learning experiences where they brought in Anson Williams from Happy Days to direct.
Okay.
To direct, and we had Nancy Stafford from
Too Close for Comfort, among other things.
Right.
The In-Laws.
And then me also in the cast, and then they cast locally out of Louisville and Lexington and Cincinnati. They brought actors in from all over, and used as a learning tool for the students at Asbury to be on the production staff and the crew of this TV pilot. So we made a real show, and it's actually quite charming. I hope. But I don't know if it's ever going to get sold. That's okay. What pilots do. We don't know.
You're right. Okay, got two more here. One called The Fifth Passenger, where you play Langdon.
Yes, just saw the premiere of that two nights ago. They had a premiere screening here in Hollywoodland at the Grauman's Chinese Theater.
So
that is completed and done. It's another space adventure. And I play a human being in it who is the billionaire the trillionaire who financed the space program in question.
What is your ratio of human to non-human characters, do you think?
It's probably right. I think if you look at my entire IMDb list, it's roughly like maybe I would say 60-40 in favor of creatures.
Okay. Well, you're still working, so.
Yeah. So, the creatures have afforded me longevity that I wouldn't have with my own face.
I'm not saying that. And then finally, here's somewhere in between, Count Orlok in a production of Nosferatu.
Ooh, that's a for real, and that's coming. That'll be available to be seen next year, 2018.
Okay.
It is a you might want to call it a remake, but it's actually a remix. So my director created matte shots off the original film and filmed us in front of green screen and plopped the two together. Added dialogue that he didn't rewrite it or retool it or reimagine it. The dialogue is actually very fitting to the silent film that you know well.
Okay.
So he wrote dialogue that would express verbally what you were watching in the original silent film.
And you don't have to be Klaus Kinski.
And I did get to play the iconic role of Count Orlok, originally screened by Max Schreck.
Yep.
So yeah, that was a lifelong dream of mine. That was my bucket list character that I have never gotten to play. And now that I've played him, it's like I think I can be done after this. I don't know.
Well, what do you? I mean, especially if you're doing creatures, what kind of physical? Are there specific workouts you can do, training to get you prepared for something? Is your workout different for Count Orlok compared to Amphibian Man?
Yes. Basically, once I look at a script and see what's required of me physically, I'll know. Okay, because especially if a creature has to squat a lot, you know, if you do that bent leg, you know, hunchback like kind of thing, you have to get strong in that position. And even for Saru on Star Trek Discovery, I'm up in a high heeled position, so my calves have to be of some strength. I'm in hoof feet, so it's a high-heeled shoe without a heel behind it. So I'm actually have to work on my balance so that I don't, so that I'm not teetering on film too much. So it depends on the role completely.
Okay. So you mentioned your age earlier, but how are your joints?
You know what? For 57, I am holding up remarkably well when it comes to joints and hips, and I can still put my legs behind my head like a contortionist. So I haven't thrown anything out yet, so let's knock on something. Right?
Knock on something for that. So I'd say you're going to be, if you're not already, in the award season, so more you're going to be able to hit the award shows, or are you stuck with work?
I'm actually on hiatus right now from Star Trek Discovery, so I've got a couple months off here. So it looks like I'll be free to, if invited to award shows, I will be able to attend, it looks like. But
I think it should be mandatory. I want, especially at the Academy Awards, I'm going to shoot big. I want to see you and Andy Serkis present together in green suits and white dots, covered in white dots and in a green bodysuit.
Except that Andy Serkis is the one who does that, and I wear the practical makeups.
Well, great. Then
I've never done motion capture.
You're out. Well, then now you have your each outfits, and then you can just stare at each other. Waiting for Godot.
If he comes out with the green leotard and dots on, and I come out in some like ram horns and hoof feet and talons, there you go.
And then do Waiting for Godot. See, there's your next project.
Okay. Boom.
Doug, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. I really appreciate it, and congratulations with the film. I hope a school of people go see it.
Oh, well, thank you so much. I've never been happier. Having a great year, and it's always a huge pleasure to talk to you and all my folks back home in Indianapolis.
Has Ball State bothered you for more money yet?
No. Well, I have a scholarship fund there as well, by the way, the Doug Jones Scholarship Fund for the theater and dance department. So they've got my money.
All right. Doug, have a great holiday.
You too, Matt. Thanks so much.
All right, man. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. From December of last year, that was Doug Jones, Ball State grad, Indianapolis native, and yes, full disclosure, a friend. Shape of Water is up for 13 Academy Awards. The Academy Awards are on Sunday. All right, here we go. For entertainment purposes only, don't go using Junior's College Fund. Best Picture, 3 Billboards, although it wouldn't surprise me if Shape of Water wins. Best Actress, Frances McDormand, wouldn't be surprised if Sally Hawkins wins. Best Actor, Gary Oldman, I think that's a lock. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. And you can buy booze on Sundays. Best Supporting Actress, probably going to Allison Janney. Would love for it to go to Laurie Metcalf. I'm good either way. Supporting actor, probably going to go to Sam Rockwell. Would love for it to go to Sam Rockwell. Would love to go have it go to Willem Dafoe either way. And can somebody give Roger Deakins an Academy Award for God's sake? He's been, what, 14 times? 14 times. And legitimately, Blade Runner 2049 looks great. So... also, what else am I rooting for? Faces, Places, of course. Yes, Coco. And just a good evening of awardship. This and the Tonys are the only ones I watch. And if it gets better films out to a wider audience, then so be it. I'll be at New Boswell on Sunday watching the awards. Hope to see you there. Otherwise, have fun and be safe. Ladies and gentlemen, some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Oh, shameless plug. The Big Guns, or Whose Little Lily Is She? A radio western comedy at Scottish Rite Cathedral, Saturday, March 3rd at 7:30 p.m. Next Friday and Saturday at 7:30 p.m. with an additional 3 p.m. matinee on Saturday the 10th. Full disclosure, it's being directed by yours truly. If you enjoy old school westerns done as a radio play, hope to see you there. So until next time, go see a good movie. There's plenty out there. You deserve it. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, Michigan.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What kind of parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
Okay. We'll do it live.
Okay.
Well, no. We'll do it live!
Pull the string! Pull the string!